From Pod Center, this is the Scott Van Pelt Show on ESPNRadio.com.
What's happening? Welcome in. Scott Van Pelt Show, ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance with Ryan Russillo. I'm Scott Van Pelt. Day after a loud statement was made in the Superdome by the New Orleans Saints. We had Tom Jackson on with us yesterday, Ryan, and he said he thought it was the most important game in the history of the franchise. And I felt the same way because I think when you're a team like New Orleans that doesn't have a great deal of history to lean on, and you're playing a team from outside your conference that has been this decade arguably the team of the decade, regardless of where they are right now, on the stage as big as Monday Night Football, it's a measuring stick. You get to find out where you are in relation to them. They were a lot better. New England started going for it on fourth down, and I could imagine all the people saying, oh, they're going for it. They had to go for it because field goals weren't going to help them against Drew Brees, who, in my opinion, is very much in the MVP discussion. They get touchdowns, whether it's through the air or, surprisingly enough, on the ground. They lead the NFL in rushing touchdowns. I didn't even realize that until I started digging in. I think that gets lost on people.
Yeah, they're actually good on the ground last night, which is lost in a perfect QB rating from Drew Brees.
The net of it is this. This is a team that has every right to believe it's a Super Bowl contender and a very realistic one, in my opinion.
I disagree with you a little bit about the most important game ever, though.
Okay.
Because
they had a game against Chicago to go to the Super Bowl.
Right.
I understand that.
That's slightly bigger deal. If you want to talk about regular season.
And that's a great point.
If you want to talk regular season, then I would agree with everyone and the people that have followed this team for a long time all say out of New Orleans, yes, this is the biggest regular season game because of the stage, because of who they're playing, and because of the season, then that's fine. But when I started looking at this weekend slate, including the Monday night game, and I've been saying that for a couple of weeks, I felt like Minnesota was the more complete team because mm-hmm. they're a little bit nastier on defense. And I'm looking at New Orleans giving up some points over the last few weeks that, you know, maybe you wouldn't expect them to give up points. You know, 23 to St. Louis when they're not scoring. Jake Delhomme in Carolina gets 20. Atlanta gets 27. The Dolphins, 34. The Giants team, which now looks like a mess, even though that was a big statement game at the time, 27 points. And I'm thinking maybe they're not as solid defensively as they were to start this season. I'm starting to think they were just bored, man.
And then they went out and did what they did last night, which the story of the game, as much as you look at Brees, who had 5 incompletions and 5 touchdown passes.
Think about that. 373 yards on 18 completions.
Correct. Only 5 hit the ground and 5 made their way into the end zone, which is amazing. But more amazing is that they have people out there on defense that were, I kept hearing the term on the street, like they were hobos. No offense to hobos, but
hobos can't cover like this.
No, cover 2 lost on hobos. They just want a sandwich.
Another more man.
They just want a sandwich,
yeah.
Really.
Or that, yeah.
Or a beer.
Yeah.
But you had a number of different players in the secondary for New England last night making huge plays that weren't even on the team at the beginning of this month. But what, beyond even that, Ryan, what blew my mind was that they made Tom Brady look as uncomfortable as I can remember seeing him look in a long time, throwing off his back foot a ton, having to throw underneath to Welker and constantly having a safety that was a spy on him to make sure, well, fine, you can catch it underneath, but guess what? You're getting blasted 6 yards after you catch it, not 20 yards after downfield. I felt like their defense upped the ante. The fact that they made Brady look uncomfortable was the story of the game to me, and I think that's part of the reason why the secondary was able to make some of the plays they did, because Brady constantly is thrown off his back foot and never was very comfortable.
The Pats came out offensively in that first possession and ran 9 of 14 plays with a 2 tight end set, okay? And they controlled the line of scrimmage.
Yep.
They blasted the Saints D-line on that touchdown by Lawrence Maroney. I mean, completely controlled the blocking.
Yep.
And then what happens? Welker, big return, all the momentum.
Pick.
They've got a short field, and they go 3 wide.
Mm-hmm.
I think Belichick and this offense, because of the Moss-Welker-Brady dynamic, where Brady had come in throwing 300-plus yards in 5 straight games, and that was one shy of the record, they're coming in going, well, we still need to worry about keeping up with the Saints. It was like they were worried about keeping up offensively with the Saints, even though they'd had momentum in the lead early on. They come out 3 wide, they throw a pick. It was a bad throw. I don't think that was on Moss. I think McKenzie made a good read on it, but Brady needed to do a better job as he was moving around. But you're right. The Patriots looked uncomfortable, and they were as confused defensively as I've ever seen them. Bill Belichick, a.k.a. formerly the greatest coach of his era, which I can no longer call on that after the Colts game, he had nothing. He had nothing. And a guy that has prided himself on being able to take guys and plug them in and shore up a defense, which statistically was number 2 in points allowed and is now at number 7, if that's not one of the biggest lies stats are going to tell this season, you look at his corners, and we thought they were getting better, at least those of us watching the Patriots closely, and it's just year after year they keep taking these older guys that are always hurt, younger guys that aren't drafted. He has these top draft picks that he trades out of all the time, and we all applaud him for it, and he has a junk secondary again. And this has been going on for New England for years, and everybody's overlooked it because they've been just good enough, and it was completely embarrassed last night.
I mean, the Devery Henderson touchdown is simply a matter of a blown coverage. But to be fair, as Trent Dilfer said last night, and I completely agree with this, there's no defense for a perfectly thrown ball. And you go up against Drew Brees, and his level of accuracy is a joke. He throws the ball in windows that the ball can fit in by an inch on either side. And last night on SportsCenter, you had Millen and Young, who were down on the field, and I defer to these guys who played, I mean, in the case of Young, at Hall of Fame level, who at that position, when they're awed by what they're seeing out of the accuracy of Brees, then I'm not excusing what you're saying because I agree with it. I just think that when that secondary for New England went up against that level of accuracy and superiority from Brees, there's nothing you can do. And that's why Belichick felt the need to roll the dice immediately, because I have to score touchdown for touchdown. Otherwise, I won't be able to keep up.
No, he obviously was doing that and worrying about keeping up all the time. But to see a blown coverage on a corner blitz because the safety doesn't know it, I can watch 30 college football games or parts of them on a Saturday and never see
even bad MAC teams.
MAC teams, though, they'll put 12 guys out there. They don't even count because the refs are actually work study guys.
Right? They were refereeing intramural games on Friday night between Teague and Tep, and then they get to call the game.
How mad are MAC fans right now?
They know MAC fans know no one loves their football more than I do.
The Scott Van Pelt Show.
Sean, I want to begin this with a moment of honesty. When you guys lost on Monday night to Denver earlier this year, I believe I quit you on this show. I said, I don't want to hear this about San Diego anymore. I'm done with it. Same story every year. And from that moment, you guys obviously have flipped the script, and here you are rolling. Was there a moment where things changed with your team or your locker room, or did it just require a bit of patience?
Actually, we were listening to your show, and we heard you write us off, so it kind of gave us some motivation to go out there and start playing a little better.
So San Diego should thank me, because I lit the fire beneath your behinds. That's what it was, huh?
Definitely. So, no, actually what it was is, honestly, we've been practicing the same way and preparing having the same game plan week in and week out, and practicing and understanding that we win games during the week and not just on Sunday. And so we've had that same philosophy all week. I mean, unfortunately, we lost a couple games earlier to good teams, you know, very quality opponents and really good teams that just they made more plays than us. So we, at no point did we start to worry. We understand it's a long season. I mean, we've been in that same situation 3 or 4 other times. So to us, it was not a big deal. It was just keep on playing. It's a lot of football to be played, and we understand that other teams have a lot of football to be played too. We're just a firm believer that everything's decided after week 16. You can't really, you know, because the season is such a roller coaster for every team that you just never know what to expect. So you just got to keep going out there and chopping away and keep on playing.
I realize it's the other side of the ball, and there's so much talk about Manning and Favre and Brees, but how would you assess the play of your quarterback, Philip Rivers, at this point?
I mean, obviously he's out there winning ball games for us. I mean, he showed he can do it in a number of different ways. He showed he can put a game-winning drive together at the end of the game and win the game in the Giants game. He showed that he can make the big pass on third down. He showed he can throw the deep ball. He showed he can make a couple plays with his feet. So he's out there obviously doing all the things that we're asked of, and we understand the fact that he's our leader, and only way we get to where we go is through Phillip Rivers, and he's accepted responsibility, and we continue to look up to him and continue to believe in him. He keeps on playing outstanding, and I think he's only scratching his iceberg. Our goal is to get better every week, and that's what he's been doing, getting better every week, which allows us to get better every week. So I think we got a lot. Again, we have a lot more football to be played, and we could play a lot better football.
Sean Phillips of the San Diego Chargers joins us here on the Scott Van Pelt Show on ESPN Radio. Sean, I gotta be honest, I gotta back it up a little bit, because I had some stuff prepared when I thought we were gonna talk. And I'm out working for College Game Day this past weekend, and I'm prepping up, and then I realize there's all this back and forth about some smack talk between you and Denver's head coach Josh McDaniels. So I know you may want to say, well, hey, that was 2 weeks ago, but can you just clear up what happened and what's blown up to be a sort of an odd story between you and a head coach?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely can clear it up. Well, what happened was we warm up at, like, in the corner of the end zone, so we always warm up in the same spot every single game. So he initially said I ran up to him and started blurting things at him. I was already standing there, and when he ran past me, I simply said that we're going to beat that, explaining my team's going to win the game, you know, and I, of course I said that I initiated the conversation, but I never told him that I was going to beat his. You know, like I would never threaten a coach. Like, we can get in a fight on the field, whether it's a player or a coach. We can't fight on the field. So I told him that we were going to beat that, you know, and I guess he thought I said I was, you know, trying to threaten him. And then he went and said, we own you, you know, and I didn't take offense to it because he said it with a smile on his face and he said, we own you. So I didn't take it as like, oh, he said F me or that he wanted to fight. I didn't even take it the wrong way. I just merely, like, I told my team, like, oh, he said he owned us, da 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 da. So guys kind of got fired up. And to me, after the game, I didn't think nothing of it until they came up to the reporters, came up and said that to me about it, you know. And then a week later, I see it on ESPN that, you know, he's commenting on it a week later. For me, it's a dead issue. I forgot about it. The moment after it happened, I forgot about it. So I apologize to him if he think that I was trying to threaten him or intimidate him. No, I was had confidence in my team, and I said we were basically going to win the game. I just told him we were going to do it before the game, and obviously we went out there and did it. So that should put the story to rest.
Yeah, you did take care of him. But when Denver was starting off 6-0, was there ever a time where you and your teammates were looking and go, what is going on up there? How are they undefeated?
No, I mean, they're a good football team. So it was never a how are they doing this or how are they doing that. They went out there and they executed their game plan and they made more plays than the other team. That's how they were able to win games. But we looked at it not as a challenge, I mean, not as a obstacle, but as a challenge, you know. We were looking forward to that challenge of climbing back up the ladder. They're trying to get to where the Broncos were. They were in first place and that's a place that we wanted to be. And people don't realize that the hard part isn't getting to first place. The hardest part is maintaining first place, and that's what they didn't do. You know, they got to first place, but they didn't maintain first place, and which is the hard part. Now we have that task, and everyone looking up at us, and everyone's trying to take first place from us. But we look at that. We look forward to that challenge and maintaining our first place and letting everybody chase us and just keep going out there and playing football and understanding the fact that, again, it's a long season, and we just got to keep on playing.
Chargers Sean Phillips with us here on ESPN Radio with Ryan Russillo. I'm Scott Van Pelt. You guys go to Cleveland this week. It's not always the easiest thing when a team from the West heads east. You lose time, et cetera. And frankly, you're playing a team that hasn't done much. How do you avoid the dreaded trap in the National Football League where you become the team that's not supposed to lose to a team?
Well, we understand the fact that it's a lot more at stake. You know, it's not just about the Cleveland Browns this week. It's also about the San Diego Chargers. We have to go out and take care of our business and execute our game plan and continue to try to get one game better. We played a good game last week, but we must play a better game this upcoming week. We never know what they're going to do. They can come out and kick onside. They can come out and have trick plays. You never know. So you have to prepare for every single game as it's the same and as it could be your last game. Because it could be our last game. I mean, that could be. We could lose this game, and it can affect us for the playoffs. Affect us for going to the playoffs. We never know, you know. So therefore, we got to go out there and continue to concentrate and focus on the task at hand, and understand that it's not an obstacle coming up this week. It's a challenge, and we look forward to having those challenges because that's what makes us a stronger team and make us a complete team. Games like this help prepare you for the next game because you have to be strong this game. You have to be solid. And you have to be disciplined and go out there and continue to believe in your team and believe in your coaching staff and execute the game plan to the best of our ability. And hopefully, we can come out with a victory.
Sean, you're in your third year with the program. Touchdown Shutdown benefits nonprofit after school stuff. You can go to the website as well, tdshutdown.org. What has been the motivation for your involvement in this charity?
My motivation, honestly, was growing up. I grew up in Philadelphia, and I'm in North Philadelphia, which is definitely not the safest to be raised, but I had somewhere to go after school. I went to a place called the Police Athletic League where I could play basketball, lift weights, play tennis, play pool, ping pong, whatever it may be, and I was doing it with my peers. So that kept me out of the street because everyone knows there's so much to do the street, especially living in the city and your parents are at work and you're home by yourself. There's so much trouble into. And I was one of those kids, fortunately, that I was able to steer clear of that trouble by having an outlet, and that outlet was the Police Athletic League. So I just want to give the kids the same thing, the same opportunity I had. We want to give them an outlet so that they don't, so they don't have to feel that they have to go out and get in trouble, or go out and run around and do, you know, God knows what. This gives them a better chance to succeed in life, you know, to be able to hang out with other peers, to be able to develop their skills, to be able to have tutors so they can develop their minds. And so that's why it touched me near and dear, and I just want to continue to be able to give back and give people the same opportunities I have.
That's great stuff. Keep repping North Philly out there in SoCal. Best of luck this week in Cleveland. And if you have anything to say to Mangina about whipping his behind, keep it silent before the game.
No, don't actually. Make it public. It was fun stuff.
Hey, Sean, thanks, man.
Yeah, thank you very much. I enjoy it.
The Scott Van Pelt Show.
Bobby Bowden will retire after Florida State's bowl game. No official announcement yet. But that's the news that is expected to come down. And Ryan Russillo, my co-host here, is the host on Saturdays of College Game Day. Last week, you were in Gainesville where the Noles took on the Gators. Yeah. You had a chance to sit down with Bobby Bowden. And when you did, you had a conversation with him. In part, you asked this question. We'll let you hear Bobby's response to the question. Is there a downside to a coach in waiting?
There's not a downside to it if everybody agrees. You know, if you have dissension because of it, that could be kind of sticky. In other words, I'm not planning on coaching forever. You know what? Another year is really what I was trying to get. And so Jimbo has been named by the president as a successor, and that's fine with me. He and I are very close, nearly like father son. You know, he coached for Terry for years. I've known him since he was a teenager nearly. And so, if the chemistry is good, it's no problem. Now, if the chemistry is not good, they could be problems.
Coach, you just said a moment ago, though, you were looking to get another year. Is that the plan all along to coach in the 2010 season?
Yeah. You know, it had been set up that he would receive a payoff if he wasn't the head coach in, what, 2011? Right. You know, and that's kind of the date it was set. But we got off to a bad start, and I think there were some people that were about ready for me to leave now.
How would you then script the perfect ending for you and your career at Florida State?
Well, you know what I was hoping would happen is that I could coach and not say when I was going to leave. I've tried to avoid saying when I was going to leave so that people wouldn't say anything about it. So I could just coach and one day quit, you know, and say, well, that's it, everybody. I'm through. But it don't work that way. Everybody wants to know exactly how long are you going to be here? What are you going to do this or that? And so, I was trying to get away from the fact, well, this is the last time you'll be in Gainesville. Well, this is the last time you'll be in so and so. Well, this is the next last time you'll be here. I was hoping I could avoid that, but it's impossible.
And so the plan or the hope was that he'd get one more year, and that's not going to happen. And when you spent time with him, how did his presentation of what he hoped impact how you viewed him?
I left that conversation, Scott, and I thought it was a certainty he'd be back for 2010.
Really?
I was convinced of it. So, now, he's really good at talking in front of people, but you started to put it all together. You realize that this year is a huge disappointment, and rumblings that, let's face it, he's not out there exactly dialing up the game plans all day long.
No, and I mean they had to look. I no secret, I'm a Maryland guy. It took a pull a rabbit out of a hat to beat them to even become bowl eligible, and it was obvious to your point that there were a lot of issues there. But when you got so many different people that have been head coaches, and Amato from NC State who's back on the staff, and you've got a coach in waiting in Fisher, and you heard a lot of rumblings about infighting about.
Right, the D coordinator's on his way out, Mickey Andrews,
and
this year.
There's a succession plan in place, and a lot of schools are doing this, and my opinion is it just doesn't work.
No, it sounds good at the time, but then you're not really thinking about how long the guy has to wait around. But the general point is that I feel like Bobby Bowden wasn't spinning this to us. I felt like you got done talking with him, and he was convinced, hey, you know what? I'm going to get another year here. I'm Bobby Bowden.
There's a statue of me outside of the stadium.
And if I say I'll leave after 2010, like the original plan, because if Jimbo Fisher wasn't the head coach for 2011, the school was going to have to cut him a check for $5 million, it all made sense. So that's why beginning of this week, it was a surprise to me. And I'm wondering whether or not it was a big surprise to Bobby Bowden, because unless he just did a complete act with us on Friday, but I didn't feel like he was making up stuff to us.
We had Herb,
sell us on it.
We had Herb Street on, Kirk Herb Street on SportsCenter last night, and we both, I think, came to the same conclusion that as tough as it is, if you're a fan of college football, you've seen this guy become a legend there, make football relevant in a way that it hadn't been before in Tallahassee, that it's painful to see a man that's got this sort of charm, this sort of charisma, and who's meant so much to college football. At the same time, with the business of football being what it is, with a guy down in Gainesville who's taken over the state, they have the right to make this decision. You can't be, and to use the term held hostage seems harsh, but Florida State can't be held hostage by the man, even if there's a stadium, even if there's a statue of him outside of Doak Campbell.
No, and it really comes down to this question. How is the football program doing?
Not very well.
You got to make a change.
The Scott Van Pelt Show.
Stanford running back Toby Gerhard. And Toby, congratulations, man. You've been killing it. Ryan Russillo and I have both been trumpeting your candidacy for the Heisman Trophy for quite some time now. What was it like for you when you first started to hear your name and Heisman Trophy mentioned in the same sentence?
You know, it was an honor. It was extremely exciting. And I don't think there's ever been a day that I was more excited than my name was first getting mentioned. And to still be considered at this point, you know, is an honor and, you know, living a dream.
Would it be enough to just go to New York? I don't want to give you the loser's mentality of I don't want to win the Heisman, because I'm sure every kid that plays football grows up wanting to win it. But would it be enough just to get to New York to feel like that your accomplishments were being recognized?
Yeah, you know, it'd be a huge honor to get to New York. And I mean, like you said, you don't want to say you're going to be satisfied with getting there, but, you know, definitely. And to even be considered, like I said, is phenomenal. It shows, you know, a lot of great things about, you know, the Stanford football program and, you know, the year as a whole.
Toby Gerhard of Stanford, their running back, a guy who was tearing it up this season, joins us here on the Scott Van Pelt Show on ESPN Radio. For those that are watching on ESPN2, they're watching highlights of you just run over defensive backs. Like you should have charges pressed against you.
Dump truck.
How would you describe your running style?
Yeah, I'd say it's physical. You know, I'm a north-south runner. I get downhill quickly and hard to bring down. You know, good yards after contact, good balance, and you know, the ability to take it all the way.
Is it true that after games, because you don't wear any protection on your arms, it's just those big pipe fitters hanging out, that they're all cut up and bleeding and you don't even notice it? So, like, when guys come up to talk to you at your locker, they're ravaged because of all the missed tackles or arm tackle attempts.
Yeah, my arms do take a beating. They're always bruised, battered, cuts, bleeding. Yeah, I mean, that's the toll they take, you know, throughout the game.
Is your nickname really White Thunder?
I haven't heard that one. I really don't know.
Well, Ryan's been calling you that. If it's not, it is now, because Ryan has been calling you that for about the last 2 months.
See, I got it from a Stanford guy, though, who used to play, works with us now. So I had gotten the word there, but maybe that was just one person told him that. So if you want to use it, feel free. But now you'll know where it came from.
Hey, Toby, this has been a year for not just you, but your program, where you talked about a great year for Stanford, and you beat a red-hot Oregon team, then you house USC, then you get Notre Dame with the nation watching, where you go over 200 there. Is there a moment for you when you're an old man and you look back on this season, if you close your eyes, you'll picture one specific moment that stands out above all the others?
I would say it's going to be, you know, our game at USC. I'd say it wasn't with me directly, but after Sherman took the interception back, you know, turning around and looking at the stands and just seeing, you know, the fans pile out of there. And, you know, that just, you know, USC has been the Pac-10 power for the last 6-7 years. And, you know, Stanford's always been at the bottom. And, you know, my senior year, finally getting to that point, you know, where we're beating USC in the Coliseum, you know, taking it to them. And their fans are getting it, believing. That's something, you know, I'll close my eyes, you know, as I'm older and, you know, always remember that day.
What about Coach Harbaugh going for two? That's gotten a bit of a bit of attention. Is it just a matter of wanting to make a statement of where Stanford is in the pecking order now?
I think so. You know, we didn't question his decision one bit. You know, he's our leader, and I think that was just a chance to make a statement, to put the game out of reach. And yeah, you know, just
Toby, the game was out of reach a long time before he went for two, my man. I mean, that was just, to me, that was just putting their foot on their neck. But, I mean, I get it.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's kind of the MO that, you know, Coach Harbaugh was trying to instill all year, you know, is to finish games, to be relentless. Step on their throat. And I think that was a perfect opportunity to do that.
I think he's crazy, but I think he's a good crazy. And I think he's perfect for Stanford just to change the mentality of a program that hadn't been bowl eligible since 01. And I look at your style, and, you know, you look like this unleashed chaos out on the field. Who would win? Let's say you get the ball 10 yards out. He's coming up to tackle you. Who's winning that battle at, like, the 5-yard line between you and Harbaugh?
Oh, wow.
He's not watching. You can say you.
Yeah, and you're done anyway. Don't worry.
I'd say me. He's definitely crazy. He's definitely wild, but I think I'd have the upper hand on him.
I got to ask you one question about your freshman quarterback, Andrew Luck.
Yeah, it's a good point.
What kind of headlines is this kid going to make his next couple seasons at Stanford?
Oh, man, he's going to be the real deal. I mean, he showed it this year. You know, I think he only had – I mean, he just put up phenomenal numbers, phenomenal leadership in the huddle. And he's the real deal. You know, we called him – I think we nicknamed him, you know, his true freshman year, the truth. You know, he's going to do it all. And there's no doubt in my mind that, you know, he's going to be – you know, a legitimate Heisman contender himself and, you know, potential number one overall draft pick in the next couple of years.
Stanford running back Toby Gerhart with us here. Scott Van Pelt Show, ESPN Radio and ESPN2. And final thought as it relates to the next level. And Ryan and I have solicited opinions around here. You talk to the McShays of the world. And even though you've done all that you've done this year, there's still some question about, well, where will you go? Maybe third round, maybe fourth round, that type of thing. Do you feel like there's any doubt in your mind that what you do will translate at the next level in the NFL?
No, I think it will translate. You know, same kind of thing coming out of high school. You know, people are questioning, you know, can I play tailback at the next level? And I think, you know, over the past 4 years, I've proven that. And, yeah, there's definitely going to be questions going in. You know, I'll prepare for the combine, run a good 40 time at the combine, and, you know, hopefully get a shot and prove people wrong and show them that there's no doubt I can do it at the next level.
What's a good time for you in the 40? What do you expect to run? 4.5?
Yeah, I expect to run a low 4.5, you know, high 4.4. I mean, I expect to put up some really good numbers.
Now, I hope you learned to lie about that, like those SEC defensive backs when they say a low 4.3. They just, you know, yeah. Who knows? They can run a 4.6. They're going to tell you that. Well, good luck. We hope you at least get to New York to become a finalist for the Heisman. You deserve it based on the production and just a great turnaround season for a Stanford program that's probably not used to the success the last couple years. And you've just been, as a football fan, a blast to watch on TV, man.
All right. Thank you very much.
It's time for Scott Van Pelt's One Big Thing. One Big Thing. On ESPN Radio and ESPNRadio.com.
One Big Thing is presented by Progressive Insurance. And the end is rarely what both sides want. You talk to people who've broken up. Oh, what happened? Oh, we both decided it was better that we go separate ways. No, you didn't. One of you did. The end means that one of you is bummed out about it, and sometimes they stay that way for a long time, and sometimes they never get over it. Relationships end, inevitably, at some point. It's rare, almost impossible, for both sides to agree on the timing, especially when there is a statue of one of you outside of the stadium where you made football matter. So the end's come for Bobby Bowden at Florida State. And this is a man whose charm was impossible to resist. You spent a little bit of time around him, and you knew why he absolutely killed it on recruiting. He was a guy that could make mama fall in love in the living room over some cobbler, and he could make daddy feel comfortable that he'd be pinch hitting for him while he looked after his boy. Coach him up, school him up, church him up, all that stuff. But the folksy charm is only part of it. Bowden created a juggernaut on the field. You finish in the top five as many years in a row as he did, it's almost an impossibility. But when you win at that level, you leave a mark up there on the wall. And when the water inevitably recedes, the same folks who you made fall in love with you now want to know why you are so far removed from the heights where you took them in the first place. When the Noles named Jimbo Fisher coach in waiting, the clock started ticking, inching towards a day everybody hoped would not be uncomfortable. But it's here, and it is. Uncomfortable, I mean. Because Bobby Bowden didn't want this, and yet, to me, the timing seems right, if anything, maybe overdue. And it must be gutting for them to know at Florida State that they are taking away from Bowden the one thing he truly loves and defines him beyond his family. And it must be a hell of a thing for a man who has made his life doing something to know that it is over, because it gives him nothing but time to contemplate what in the hell he is supposed to do now and the time he has got left to do it.
I can feel bad for the guy.
Mm-hmm.
I can be sentimental.
Yep.
But at the same time, I can 100% agree with the decision.
And I agree with that as well. I just think that you, when you take inventory of the entire situation, this man was not perfect. There were black marks against him. There were issues that were far from perfect. But legends want to believe they can go out on their own time, and that's just not always the way it works out.
87 to 2000, finished the season, top five AP ranking. Don't think we'll ever see that again.
I don't think we'll ever see anybody like Bowden or Paterno again either. It's the end of an era.
The Scott Van Pelt Show. Weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and ESPNRadio.com. Thanks for listening to today's podcast. For more of the best that ESPN Radio has to offer, tune in from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Eastern for the Scott Van Pelt Show on ESPN Radio and online at ESPNRadio.com.